From WJCT in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Sean Birch.
And this is Deemable Tech, episode 74, the episode where I like my crow breaded with a light, crispy panko crust and drizzled with a roasted lemon and rosemary sauce.
The Deemable Tech podcast is brought to you by A Small Orange, homegrown hosting, a refreshingly different approach to web hosting, on the web at asmallorange.com.
Hey guys, don't forget to check us out on Reddit. You can find us at reddit.com/r/deemable or go to deemable.com/reddit. That's the easier way. You can vote for which stories you think we should talk about on the show and submit stories of your own.
You do need a Reddit account, but that takes about 2 seconds. You don't even need to give Reddit an email account, although I would recommend it unless you have a photographic memory and will never, ever, ever forget your password.
Also, if you post some stories or comments, we might give you flair, because that's just the kind of podcast host we are. Let's get right into the big stories in the tech world for this week.
Wait, Ray, are you going to tease us?
Tease us?
Yeah, you know, like say something like stick around for our top story about iPhones or something.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like slowly take my shirt off.
Stick around till the end of the show, everybody, when Ray will slowly take his shirt off. Oh, God.
Okay, how about this? Our top story this week is Hillary Clinton's email address. Stick around for that. But first, here is this week's rundown.
This week was the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain, and Samsung used the opportunity to take the wraps off the next iteration of its flagship phone, the Samsung Galaxy S6. Ooh. And the Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge.
Ooh, not Plus.
No. That's right. The S6 will come in two formats, a standard rectangular shape and a more curvy version with a display that wraps around the edge, which can display alerts by lighting up.
Sexy.
Yeah. Now, regardless of what you think about Samsung's latest gimmick, both phones are aimed squarely at the premium smartphone market.
I see what you did there. Squarely.
Samsung has ditched the removable plastic cases of previous Galaxy S's for a phone that is completely encased in aluminum and Gorilla Glass, similar to the iPhone.
Hey, look at that.
The phone boasts an almost ridiculous Quad HD 2560x1440 Super AMOLED screen. Mm. Why would anyone need that kind of resolution on a 5.1-inch screen? Virtual reality. Yes, you can strap your S6 into the latest version of Samsung's Gear VR for a super high-res virtual reality experience. Hmm. And since the screen will be literally centimeters from your face, it has to look good.
So that's not like the Google Cardboard. It's actually like
actually a real headset that uses the phone to power the display.
Do they have a new version of the Google Cardboard, though, that you could use the S6 in?
I think the new version would be you cut a different shaped hole.
There you go. Oh, all right, cool. All right.
Now, not all of Samsung's longtime users are actually that excited about the S6 because the premium case materials actually come with a sacrifice. They mean that the newest Galaxy phones no longer allow for a removable battery or an expandable SD card, which are both two longstanding and much beloved features of the Galaxy line.
Hmm. Wait, so what I just heard is Samsung copied the iPhone. Is that what I understand?
Pretty much entirely.
Okay, cool.
I'm just going to hand you that one.
All right, so in 3 to 5 years, we'll be seeing another lawsuit. Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, and one more thing, Ray Hollister.
All right, what's that?
Samsung Pay, formerly known as Loop Pay, with its magnetic card swiping technology, is built right into the phone.
What? Samsung Pay? Ah, I cannot believe this. You've got to be kidding me. Well, you know, like I said in the open, it's time for me to eat crow. You know, 2 weeks ago, I said I did not expect Samsung to be able to pull this off.
Yep, no, they did.
That's crazy. So this was in works for a while.
Yeah, apparently.
Loop Pay was just keeping things quiet.
Now, refresh your memory about this technology.
Okay, yep. So Loop Pay is a mobile payment device that uses some sort of reverse trick where it uses like a credit card swipe. So you can use it on any cash register.
Yeah, you don't have to have the tap-to-pay thing.
Yeah, any cash register that has a magnetic card swipe can use Loop Pay. And I reviewed it on that episode a couple weeks ago, and it's pretty easy to use, and it's pretty solid. But again, it uses the magnetic card stripe, which is going to really go out of fashion in the next year or two.
And you've got it, like, it's a case on your iPhone right now.
Yep.
But it's going to be built into the Samsung Galaxy S6.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Edge. One of the weaknesses of the Loop Pay case is that you have to charge it separately. And especially for an iPhone user that doesn't use a mini or a micro USB that often, it died the other day. And I was like, oh, man. Well, good thing I still have my credit card on me.
Exactly. So, Sean Birch, you do not have a smartphone.
I do not currently have a smartphone.
Would the ability to strap it to your face and have it be a VR goggles be the feature that pushes you over the edge?
Not that. No, I don't think it would be that feature. I think that's kind of cool. I don't know what use that could, you know,
virtual
have.
Reality, man.
But for what, though?
Like, that's literally all VR, the new VR generation is, though. Like, they literally are using a smartphone screen.
Yeah. I do want to see a viewfinder using a smartphone. I want that to exist in my lifetime.
Like just a little thing that you, like, you click and look at panoramas.
Yep, that's what I want.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I think there is actually a version coming out that's built for the iPhone, ironically. But, you know, I was at a certain pharmacy that I won't pick names on. We've picked on them plenty enough in the past when they deactivated Google Pay and Apple Pay. And they actually had the NFC reader taped over with black tape. Like, instead of taking it off, they just taped over it with black tape and taped over the lights. And I intentionally used my phone to pay for it. He's like, oh, no, we don't take Apple Pay. I know. Beep. He's like, how did you do that? Whatever.
High five right here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, our next story. Google has announced that Google Plus, its one-time ambitious attempt to take on Facebook and Twitter, is going under the knife.
Yep.
The social network is getting split up into streams, photos, and hangouts.
Yeah.
And it's also getting a new lead. Bradley Horowitz, a longtime VP, is taking over from David Bespris. And Bespris had actually held his position less than a year after Vic Gundotra was let go with little fanfare back in April.
They're just burning through them.
They are.
Burning through those VPs.
Google Plus was originally pitched to be Google's answer to rivals like Facebook and Twitter. And in 2012, it took the controversial step of forcibly assigning every Google user across all of its services a Google Plus account.
And by controversial, you mean make everyone hate them.
It was pretty controversial.
Yeah.
Despite this, somehow Google Plus never reached the critical mass of user activity needed to take on the big guys. And they've since kind of backed away from this one-size-fits-all approach. Google execs are now calling the social network side of the product Streams and are considering them to be separate from Photos, which is, of course, home with a ridiculous auto-awesome feature, and Hangouts, Google's free and easy-to-use chat and video conference system.
Did you say free and easy-to-use chat and video conferencing system sarcastically?
Only a little bit.
Okay,
so I know we've had some hiccups
For our listeners' sake, we have been trying to do a Google Video Hangout since the reboot.
Yeah.
And we have yet to successfully make it happen.
I don't know.
I know that there's other podcasts that do it.
When it works, it's super simple. And when it doesn't work, it's inexplicable.
It just doesn't do anything at all. It just sits there.
Yeah.
I have a question. What is the auto awesome feature?
That's
a great question. You don't know either. Oh my gosh.
I don't know.
This is really funny.
I should know. It's part of my job.
Yeah. You're fired. Pick up your paycheck and get out.
You don't work here. You can't fire me from the radio station.
Karen? Anyways.
I'm going to get an email tomorrow.
This is going to be really inside baseball. So I have an Android phone, and one of the features is that it will automatically back up any photos I take to Google Photos.
Right. I've got that on mine,
cloud
too.
Backup.
Yeah,
all right.
On Google Plus.
So just because of that, if you have photos out there on Google Plus's photos, you'll eventually see this happen. It will auto-awesome your photos for you without being asked. In fact, I don't know if you can intentionally get it to do this. And it's... Sometimes it's just as simple as it basically applies a random Instagram filter. Other times it's quite weird. It will assemble a video for you of a vacation you took. Yeah, I'm not kidding. It will make up stuff for you. And sometimes they're kind of fun, but other times they're incredibly random. It's never terrible, but it's usually amusing.
Well, apparently there is a way to manually make an auto awesome.
Oh, really?
And, Ara Wagner over at Android Central has an article about it, so I will drop that into our show notes for you to check out later.
And you also, Ray Hollister, should check it out.
I will.
And you also, Sean Birch.
All right, I'll do that.
I will check out the auto-awesoming
And everyone listening, be sure to add us to your circles while you still can.
That's right.
Oh, man.
So Google hasn't officially announced the death of Streams as a product. There are some people saying, oh, you know, this could be it. They could be on the chopping block. So, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think it's going to stick around, or do you think this signals the end? Well, they're decoupling it so they can kill it.
What exactly will it be? What will Streams be?
I mean, because the best part about Google Plus is Hangouts and Photos.
Yeah.
So if you split those off, that's what you do before you divest, before you destroy.
There are some small communities on Google Plus, and I'm not saying like it's a big thing, but there are people that use it.
Yeah.
So I participate in some of them, so I'd be kind of sad to see that go away, but it wouldn't like take a huge chunk out of my life. So I don't know.
I have so many Google accounts and therefore so many Google Plus accounts that actually made it less functional for me because I couldn't remember which Google account I was signed into.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there was no way to easily combine them. Like, yeah, you could transfer your stuff, but I'm like, I don't have enough stuff on there, Google, to make it worth transferring.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've actually never really used Google Plus at all. You know, I've gone on there to add like WJCT to my circle
as your friend
and stuff like that,
but your circle.
Never done anything, never used it to contact other people. It just never really made sense to me.
Yeah, there was a time when I was setting up the WJCT YouTube account, and I was like telling everybody at the station, hey, everybody needs to sign up for Google Plus, follow us on Google Plus, and subscribe to us on YouTube so that we can get a custom URL. And it was like, what is this? I don't even know.
What is this thing?
Like, just click the buttons. It's okay. It doesn't matter. You'll never use it again.
I mean, this is how desperate Google Plus has gotten lately. Yeah. It used to be like if somebody tagged you or something, you'd get a push notification. Now I get push notifications just if a friend posts, like someone in my close circle posts, like anything. They're just like, please, God, log in. Please.
Pay attention to us.
Yeah.
Please. Well, I don't know if this is a sign of desperation or not, but in other Google news, according to Mashable, Google's latest crazy plan is to be a wireless carrier. Just sort of. For fun.
Okay.
Google revealed this week at the Mobile World Congress that it plans to get into the wireless carrier business, offering mobile voice and data service to customers. Google says that it will do this on a small scale, buying wholesale access from Sprint and T-Mobile's networks and selling them to customers. Google says it wants to push the needle when it comes to features offered to mobile customers, for instance, allowing users to seamlessly transition between Wi-Fi and cellular connections. Google was careful to emphasize that it did not intend to compete with AT&T and Verizon, and that they have been informed of its plans. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, there's a lot of those smaller carriers that rent Spectrum, and, you know, Virgin has one, and, you know, Walmart has one.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's putting AT&T and Verizon shaking in their boots.
No.
But it's just one more spectrum that Google's getting into so that when Skynet takes over, they, you know, have easier way to connect everything together.
Yeah.
So it's good to know.
I mean, it's interesting. It's funny to me, like, Google's the company that's like, we're so huge, we'll just kind of get into the wireless business. Yeah. We'll just kind of get into the car business,
we're
fun.
Bored.
We're bored.
Let's start a car company. You know?
Yeah.
Well, what if they combine the two and every driverless car that Google rolls out has, you know, a 4G connection can get in there.
Sounds good.
Have a Wi-Fi hotspot. Yeah.
Sounds like it'd work.
I know some cars are actually already doing that.
Chevy's doing that. Yeah. Yep.
Really?
I still don't get that. Why do you need a hotspot in your car?
I don't know.
Now, when we have automated cars, that actually makes sense because I'm going to be bored. I'm not driving a car. I want to be checking my Twitter. But it's like when we went to the car show a while back. Like, I don't need a Twitter feed on my dashboard.
Yeah, exactly.
I need that Twitter feed to not be on my dashboard, actually, because I need to be driving the car.
Yeah.
I already have two kids in the back. I don't need any other distractions.
I think you should only see automated tweets generated by other cars. Like, uh-oh, tailgater, hashtag LOL.
That would actually be wonderful. All right, so let's get to our big story. So Hillary Clinton used a personal email account the entire time that she was U.S. Secretary of State.
Whoops.
So she apparently set up the email account 1 week prior to President Obama's inauguration. I'm sure those things were entirely just coincidence, and they happened around the same time. Now, she did not use an official @state.gov email address the entire time that she was there. And according to...
She had her @AOL.com.
Yes, it was her
own CompuServe.
It was her Hotmail account.
Oh,
actually.
Nice.
Earthlink. In all seriousness, Earthlink, do you know what it was? It was like @Clinton.
It was @Clinton email, and it was apparently being run on a home server. Like, they scraped together a server. I don't know if it was literally at her home. But
was it
like
at or at the State Department?
A box somewhere in the closet, basically.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That seems crazy. Now, this was 2009.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So we're not talking about the data stone ages.
No.
Like I had an email server that I ran out of my house, you know, many, many years ago. But not 2009. No. I had the Googles, you know. So this is kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm. On a lot of levels. You know, gosh, just from a IT security perspective, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. Like, we've already learned from the recent revelations about the NSA, like, email is one of the most insecure ways to communicate in the world. Just incredibly insecure. Presumably, if you're inside the government, maybe there's a little more security, or maybe the NSA at least knows not to spy on you. You know, but just to be outside it and to have @ClintonEmail.com, it's like, hey, hackers, come find me.
Now, when I originally heard this story, I didn't know about the @ClintonEmail thing. Mm-hmm. I assumed it was literally like a Google account. And I, you know, politics aside, having nothing to do with that, she's a boomer. And no, you know, no ageism here intended at all. But, you know, it's easier for millennials and Gen Xers to adapt to technology because we grew up with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And boomers didn't grow up with it. You know, they didn't use email as a regular basis. So I can totally see where she said, oh, I'm going to start this new job. It's kind of an important job in a week or two. So let me get my email set up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll go set up my new email account. You know, every time I start a new business, I set up a new email account, whether it's, you know, official or whatever. So I can totally go, okay, I get that. You know, she wasn't thinking with IT security in mind. She was just thinking, let's get this rolling. Let me get started on some things. Let me check a few boxes off the list and go.
Yeah.
Now, I would be more suspicious if she did like a certain Florida governor by the name of Rick Scott, where he had emails outside of his official government email address that he specifically used for other purposes, apparently. So that is suspicious to me. That makes me go, okay, you're doing something shady. But for her to do everything through that email address, well, I'm like, okay, well, that wasn't smart.
Yeah.
But I don't see it being shady. But there's other issues too.
Yeah. You know, she should have had somebody on her team, and she probably did, telling her that this was not the way to do things.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And apparently there was a policy set up by, you know, the White House or the State Department or whoever it was saying you need to use the official email here.
Right.
Yeah.
But Marketplace, a wonderful public radio show, did some coverage on this. And their whole way of looking at it was that the lines between work and personal life are so blurred now.
That's true.
That this is probably a problem for a lot of people where, you know, you're using the same email for a bunch of different things, or you're not thinking I need to switch to my work email or this or, you know, whatever.
Well, one of my business friends, I jokingly mentioned, oh, how many email addresses do you have? He's like, one. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I own the company. I'm never going to lose this email address. I was like, oh, that's weird. He's like, how many do you have? I'm like, personal account, deemable account, business account, WJCT account, side business account. I'm like, I think I have like 7 Gmail accounts or Google app accounts.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I just, you know, that's sort of there because I keep everything partitioned. You know, I keep my side business stuff away from my work stuff, away from deemable stuff, away from my personal stuff. But I'm tech savvy. I know how to set up multiple Gmail accounts on my phone and on my computer to where I can keep it organized. I can imagine if you're not a tech savvy person, that's annoying to have all those different email addresses and be juggling all that.
Now, I don't have Yeah. I don't have in front of me the link, but it just came back to me, too. I read a news story a couple of days ago, too, saying she, and we've all seen the pictures, she's, like, addicted to her BlackBerry.
Yep.
Yeah.
And supposedly part of the impetus here was she wanted to keep on using the BlackBerry, and she was concerned she couldn't with the state.gov email.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I don't want it to be about politics. I just, I feel like I can just dismiss it because, she's a boomer. But at the same time, it definitely looks like impropriety.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks bad.
It looks suspicious, yeah. Definitely.
Now, and the other thing was, I've heard people talk about that, you know, because of this, the documents that she created, the emails, aren't just public record the way they should be, to where they can go into the historical library of documents for the Obama administration when it goes in the library, because she possessed them.
Yeah.
So
they have to intentionally be retrieved.
Right, exactly. Whereas if this was on an official email account, then they can just grab them and use them.
Yeah, for archival purposes. Exactly. And everything like that.
Yeah, and that's really bad because then, and also too, if she used it for all of her personal email, then all of her personal stuff's in there too.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know. But to kind of compare and contrast, because, I mean, this is a new age. You know, when Obama's administration went into the White House IT was ridiculous.
Hmm.
They had Windows 95 computers in there.
Yikes.
They had old Macs. They had this hodgepodge of computers.
Mm.
And one of the things he did is he hired a CIO to whip it all into shape and get things right, which is why it's kind of crazy that this happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, she didn't work at the White House, but she worked under the White House, so she had that influence coming down.
Yeah.
So you think it would have been easy to take care of this. But to compare it to previous administration, the former Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, she did not use personal email that much when she was in office. She didn't use it to communicate with her staff. She did use it rarely. And when she did, she used the official email address. Now, Clinton's aides have said in the media that Colin Powell, the Secretary of State before Condoleezza Rice, he did regularly use a personal email account while he was Secretary of State. And an actual Powell aide confirmed that, saying that General Powell used a personal email account during his tenure at Secretary of State. He was not aware of any restrictions, nor does he recall being made aware of any for over the 4 years he served at state.
But was it at PowellEmail.com? Yeah.
No, that was actually his Hotmail account.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But yeah, so it does, yeah, like you were saying, according to Washington Post, they say the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton appears to have operated in violation of what the White House said Tuesday was a very specific guidance that members of the Obama administration use government email accounts to carry out official business. So now apparently Congress has subpoenaed the emails.
Yeah, the House Select Committee on Benghazi.
Oh, it was issued, that. Oh.
Yeah, has issued a subpoena for all of the emails in this batch of emails related to Benghazi.
I scoff because they've spent so much time chasing her down about Benghazi. But if I was on that committee, I would be asking for it, too, because here's a huge pile of documents. I mean, probably terabytes worth of data that they don't know. They don't know what's in it.
And let's be honest, she's just fed years and years of conspiracy theorists.
Oh, yeah. Like, absolutely. I mean, her argument that, well, my emails that I emailed my staff, you know, they're all public record because they're using official emails. That is a weak argument. Mm-hmm. That is really a weak argument.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just don't understand why she did that. It'll be interesting to see what does come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, she has said that she wants the public to see her emails. She posted this on Twitter today. She said she asked the state to release them, and they will review them for release as soon as possible. So the State Department is going to release those, apparently.
Yeah, they have to go through the process of combing through it to make sure that no really personal information, I guess, gets out there.
Yeah, that's a good idea, because apparently some politician recently posted some emails with a bunch of private information in them.
Like social security numbers?
Yeah, social security numbers.
The governor of some weird state somewhere.
Yeah. They're always in the news, but I forget what they're called. But yeah, so it is an ironic twist of fate to see how this has worked towards Hillary's downfall as well to Jeb Bush's. You know, both of them in kind of scandals over their emails.
Yeah.
Both of them, again, boomers.
Yeah.
Didn't think about it, you know. Didn't think about the consequences.
Yeah. Who knows?
Who knows?
This is all the information that we have as of this recording.
Yeah, that's true.
Right,
this is an unfolding story.
Yeah, so this could change by the time we release this.
And Sean Birch is a known liar.
Yeah.
So what's the takeaway here, guys? What's the lesson learned from this?
The takeaway is you follow the dang rules.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there for a reason, because even if she wasn't doing something wrong, it sure looks like she was.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was going to do any Wirt stuff, like here at WJCT, I use my at WJCT.org email to do all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I want to do something and I don't want to get caught, I use my personal email address.
Yeah.
Everybody knows this. You keep those things separated.
Ray Hollister at blacksite.org.
Yeah. I mean, It certainly sounds suspicious. Now, other than the suspicious behavior of using an email, nothing has come out yet. It could be by the time we post this online.
Yeah.
Who knows what will have happened. But it does not sound good for her. And it honestly, if she's running for president, this is bad. This is bad for her.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we'll see what, I mean, this is, you know, this is one of those things, like, maybe it's not a big deal, maybe it is, but it's one of those things that her political opponents are certainly going to use it to make hay out of.
I don't blame them either. I mean, it's bad. All right, well, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we are going to do some reviews and tell you about the Backtrack Mobile Breathalyzer.
A mobile breathalyzer?
Stay tuned. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Sean Birch.
All right, so last year I received the Backtrack Mobile Breathalyzer, which, unsurprisingly, tracks your BAC, or your blood alcohol content. In other words, it's a mobile breathalyzer.
This review brought to you by the Repetitive Department of Redundancy Department. Help stamp out and abolish redundancy. On the web at www.www.com.com.
All right, well, naming gripes aside, it is a really great product. Now, disclaimer, Backtrack did provide a sample unit for us to review. Mm-hmm. The Backtrack Mobile Breathalyzer connects with your smartphone via Bluetooth, and it's pretty comfortable to hold in your hand, and it's very easy to use. You just turn it on, open the Backtrack app, and pair it with your phone via Bluetooth, and follow the on-screen instructions. And it's kind of nice, even if you don't know how to pair it, it'll show you how to do it.
That's good, because presumably you're going to be using this when you're, you know, a little bit tipsy. Yeah.
Not exactly sober. Now, I did review this. I did a whole video showing me using it, and we're going to have that posted in the show notes. So if you're listening to this in the podcast, you need to open the website, and you need to go watch this video. It's the only time you'll probably ever see me literally drunk. I am literally drunk in this video. And one of our producers, Shannon, edited it down to a short time. But we're going to put the full uncut edition as well. It's pretty funny, if I say so myself. I repeat things a lot, not on purpose.
No.
And I completely forget about what I'm talking about.
Drunk Ray is one of my favorite Rays.
Yeah, sadly, Tom and I were not present recording of this video.
I did it at my home, in the comfort of my home, with supervision of my wife. I really appreciated that. She did everything she could to help me not get a hangover, but I had a wicked, terrible hangover after that.
Mm.
But what it does, what the breathalyzer does, is it keeps track of your blood alcohol level over time while, you know, presumably while you're drinking. And it calculates how long it will take for you to get sober.
Oh.
So you turn it on, you pair it. Once it's paired, the app will tell you when to blow into it. You blow into it until it tells you to stop. And then it tells you what your blood alcohol level is at. And then it actually does something cool. In addition to a number calculation of your BAC, it gives you an idea of where you should be feeling. So it'll say things like, you're experiencing slight alcohol intoxication.
Oh, okay. Mm.
So it gives you something to go off of to understand, like, this is how to describe what you feel right now.
Yeah.
You know, you're not drunk. You're just slightly inebriated, which was kind of nice because I was surprised at how different my actual intoxication level was versus what I thought it was.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, your perceived level.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Now, the strangest feature of the device, this is the weirdest part of all, and I still don't know if I would ever use it, but it's that it lets you post your blood alcohol level on social media.
Oh, I don't know.
So you can post it on Facebook or Twitter. You can even share a picture. Like, there's already drunk pics on Facebook enough, right?
Yeah.
But actually to post your blood alcohol level next to it. I personally never used that feature, but I definitely could see it going horribly, horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And I can only imagine the legal implications that it could possibly have, too. But it would help to explain all those wacky drunk photos you have all over Facebook. I'm not naming names here because neither one of you. but if you are a frequent, you know, or social drinker, this breathalyzer does have a great feature that will let you track when and where you drink. So I guess people can help plan your intervention. Not making a joke about alcoholism. No. Sorry about that. But you can actually, you choose what data you share. So by default, it should always stay private, but you can share it with a person. You can share it in a text message, or you can post it for all the world to see that you are drunk and you get fired tomorrow. I don't know. But the Backtrack Mobile Breathalyzer costs $99. Now, when I did the video, it was $149. I just want you to remember that when you go watch the video. That's all I'll say about that, because you got to go watch the video. It was definitely $149 when I did that video. But it is $99 now. I feel like it was actually worth $149.
Really?
Yeah, I do. It's a good, solid product. It does exactly what it says, and it's very accurate. But I think that $99 is just the perfect price point for all the features that it has. Mm-hmm. Now, there are other breathalyzers that Backtrack makes, and Backtrack is the company that makes the breathalyzers that most police departments use.
Oh.
So it's like they know what they're doing, you know? It's like, they're pretty good. The one that I reviewed actually has the same sensor that the police grade versions use.
Cool.
But they do have one that's cheaper, it uses a different sensor, and it only costs $49. And it's still pretty accurate, it's still very accurate. They also have keychain models that you can actually just literally clip to your keychain. They don't connect to your smartphone, but they do give you an accurate perception of what your BAC is. And they're only $29.
Huh.
So I actually saw those at Best Buy not too long ago.
Huh.
They had a whole display of them.
Now,
so there's a range of prices.
Do either of these cheaper options not give you the option of posting to social media?
That's true.
Well, I'm thinking that the keychain models don't, because they don't connect to your phone.
Yeah.
But yeah, the $49 one, I think you could still post it on social
media. They should charge more. They should be like, and our premium edition, which is $200, does not let you post to social media.
Now, they do. I mean, they do sell a pro version right on their website. So if for some reason you need a pro version that can be used in court, you can get that. Now, again, though, with the price differences, you know, there is a spread. So if you just wanted something cheap to put on your keychain, you know, to be super safe or to make sure your friends stay safe, then, you know, go for that. But personally, I like the model that uses the same technology that the police use to check blood alcohol level, because if I'm trusting something to check if I'm below the legal limit or not, I want to be absolutely certain it's right. I mean, I don't want any margin of error there. But, you know, of course, there is a margin of error on any of these because it's estimating your blood alcohol content, because it's not actually drawing your blood.
At least it should have the same margin of error as the one the cops are using.
Exactly, which is very tiny. Now, that being said, this is in no way an endorsement to drive while intoxicated. It is never safe to drink under the influence of alcohol. And I learned something while researching this. You can actually be arrested in several jurisdictions even if you're under the legal limit. You can be arrested for DUI. Yeah. Because if you're driving under the influence,
erratically,
or you're causing danger, you can still be arrested. Now, the thing that surprised me most about using the Backtrack mobile breathalyzer was apparently that I am a cheap date.
That's true.
You know. I would, like I was saying before, I was drunk, or I thought I was drunk, long before the device said that I was legally drunk. Or, like I said, at least I felt like I was drunk. It was crazy to me that at 0.02, I think, is when I really started feeling like I could not drive a car. There's no way I could have done that. Like, I remember getting up and walking off away from the couch and having difficulty, you know, with that. But it was, I was still way legal to drive.
What were you drinking?
Whiskey.
Oh, okay.
Jack Daniels. Yeah. I drank a lot of Jack Daniels that night. I had a little Starbucks shot glass so I could measure it. I knew exactly how much I was drinking.
Nice.
And I started drinking single shots.
Yeah.
Like every 15 minutes. And then it just wasn't working. I wasn't going.
So you had to crank it up.
Yeah. So then I started doing doubles. And then when I started doing doubles, man, it really hit me.
Yeah.
I got up to, by the end of the night, I think I was at 0.14.
Ooh.
So,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, I stopped the video around 0.12 because it just got crazy. I am a stickler for video resolutions and shooting properly. And that video, I shot in 1080p, 720p, and vertical. Which is, I mean, that is my biggest pet peeve in the world.
Oh,
and
I hate it when people shoot
vertical. Sitting there looking at my phone, talking to it, and I'm like, oh man, I'm shooting in portrait. I'll edit it later, whatever.
I feel like Tom and I should do this as well, because I feel that I'll just have like one hard apple cider, and that'll be enough for me.
You're like, I'm done. I'm out.
I'm not much of a drinker.
Keep trying to get Sean liquored up, but he won't let us.
All right. Well, that is all the time that we have for tonight. Thanks so much for listening in. And if you have a suggestion or you just have a comment for the show, give us a call or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-972-9868. Or you can always send us an email to feedback@deemable.com.
And don't forget to help us to decide what stories we talk about on the show. So go to our subreddit page and submit a story and vote other stories up or down. Deemable.com/reddit will take you there.
I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Sean Birch.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening.
It's a good
one. It's a good one. It's good.
This has been a production of WJCT Public Broadcasting. To find out more, visit us online at wjct.org.